Hey everybody, we're going to go ahead and get started. My name is David J. Neff. I'm at Dave I Am on Twitter, and the panel you guys are at and I'm hosting today is the Hyperlocal Public Television Station, Content 3.0. So today we're going to kind of explore some of the models that the folks on the panel are using around their broadcasting, public media, TV stations. We've got folks from KLRU, KCPT, and National PBS here today to talk about those models and to explore and get hard questions thrown at them about what the future of TV looks like, not just public TV and public media, but just kind of media consumption in general and a lot of other great topics. I will just start and say, please take out your phones, take photos, turn them on silent, tweet. Don't turn your phone off. That's illegal at South by Southwest to have your phone off at any time. Even if your battery's dead, rush out of the room and recharge it. I will also just say, it looks like you guys are pretty dry, so thank you for coming. I had a great, you know, I was like a PBS a comedy of just water splashed on me by cars going past and like my umbrella turning inside out. So it was a lot of fun to get over here. So thank you guys for braving the weather and coming out today. Our hashtag is Hyperlocal, so put that up on Twitter and, you know, put on your Facebook, Google Plus, to share kind of the information. You guys act as Sherpas, leading people to all the great content that's going to be out here today. So I'll go down the panel. At the end, we have Kevin. Kevin's bio. Kevin works for National PBS. And he runs their social media initiatives for its broadcast and online programming, including all of its Twitter and Facebook pages, which together have about 2 million followers. He also manages their YouTube channel, which had its 140th million hit and watch lately. So you can imagine what they're doing on YouTube and the scope and the scale of it and the kind of programming. And their YouTube channel also generates more than 1 million views a week, which is pretty amazing. We have Cliff right here. Cliff is the president and CEO of KCPT. Cliff runs that station and with an iron fist, I'm sure, as we like to tease him about, and has done some amazing stuff in his career and is definitely one of the people who understands what the future looks like and is adapting to that, and we'll get into how KCPT is doing that as well. We have Angie. Angie has a number of amazing years as a content producer, as somebody out working to make great television programming, public media programming. Also does a lot of other stuff for KCPT, which I'm sure we'll get into today, and is definitely a veteran of content production and content creation. Then we have Shane Geeter. Shane is the Director of Development at KLRU, which is our local Austin public television station. Shane is a social media rock star in his own right, above and beyond public television. Very influential in the Austin community, the Texas community, and nationwide as far as fundraising for online and fundraising for social media and fundraising in any type of digital situation. So we're really happy to have such a cool panel here today. We are going to give out some prizes here to get people warmed up and excited. So we've got two DVDs here of a little show called Downtown Abbey. I don't know if you guys have heard of that, but it's pretty popular, I think, with the kids. So I would love two people to get up and in front of this room say what their PBS moment is, what's their public broadcasting moment, the thing that when they think of public broadcasting or even public media, the first thing, what impressed you? So let's get two people for these awesome. I have two DVDs. I see a taker. Gary, go ahead, stand up.
Watching Mr. Rogers with my own children after having watched it as a child.
Awesome. Good one. Come here. So we'll give you a round of applause.
Thank you.
Give you the original season one there. Who else? One other person. Go ahead, sir.
Ken Burns baseball series.
There you go. Love it. There you go. Thank you. So we've given away some prizes. We're going to turn it over. Shane is going to give us a quick background on some of the innovative projects that PBS is up to and public media are up to. So Shane, I will let you start it off.
Great. So basically, I want to real quickly, just in 30 seconds, kind of talk about what we are as a business model, because I think that's kind of confusing, and then I'm going to dive into the products. The thing that public media and public broadcasting is, when you think about the television side of things, We're actually 350 separate, locally owned and operated nonprofit organizations, right? So we are these nonprofits in each of these communities all across the country, and we pay dues to PBS to have access to that programming and that brand. So we really are locally owned and operated, and we get to make decisions about what we want to do as stations at the local level. And then we've got this great content and great support that we're getting from PBS. So, and taking it back one step further, most of the content, almost all of the content that you see on your station, wherever you live, is produced by a station itself. So now I want to just take a couple of minutes and talk about digital initiatives that are sort of coming from PBS from the national level. And one of those things that you've probably seen and you've probably maybe watched video at your local PBS station's website, or you've watched it at pbs.org. And that's a thing called the Cove Video Player. Cove is basically a video architecture that allows you to go to pbs.org and watch great programs right there on the web. This also has been provided for local stations, so we've got our own implementation at KLRU here in Austin. And so those same programs that you're watching at pbs.org are also available at our station's website. Here's the fun part. When we create local shows here in our community, like Central Texas Gardener is a show that we produce here, and David is a big David is actually a groupie for that
totally
show.
True. Absolutely, that's how I got this gig.
So it's almost embarrassing how he tries to break into tapings, and he's been thrown out of the studio many times. So we get to add that to our local Cove player so that when people are going to our website, they're able to watch that local episode on our website the day after that show airs for broadcast in most cases. The interesting thing that this creates, there's actually a model where we can make that program available to any other PBS station in the country that wants to add that to their local video, Cove video player. So we've almost created an interesting new way of spreading content across the country, which is sort of a digital distribution. A couple of other things. You may have downloaded, or if you haven't, we'd like you to, download the PBS iPhone or iPad app, right? These are terrific content apps that allow you to see clips, but also to watch full episodes on an iPad or on an iPhone. And PBS is working on Android right now. So that's another thing. Then a couple of little technical things that we're doing that we think are really cool. One is a project that's called Project Merlin. Okay, and that is content, scheduling, photos, blog posts, things that are being created at the local station, and those are being fed to PBS.org's website. So if you've gone to PBS.org and you've said that you're from Austin or you're from Philadelphia or you're from New York and you've localized your version of PBS.org, basically, you're going to see content that's being fed to PBS.org by your local member station. So your experience at PBS.org begins to be one that's customized for your local market. And the photo that you see at the top of PBS.org in the carousel may be a photo that's being provided by your local station about a local piece of content. And the next step that we're working on right now is the opposite. It is PBS content being filtered through some really sophisticated methods to our local station websites across the country. So basically, this is PBS trying to come up with a few digital kind of streams that we can use. One is a package that is kind of a out-of-the-box website. So if you're in West Texas out in Basin PBS and you've only got a few people and you don't have access to a lot of digital talent, you're going to be able to take sort of the building blocks of a website and light that up and be able to pull lots and lots of PBS content into your local station's website. There's a sort of a medium-sized version, which is for stations that have got a little bit of digital resources, a little bit of digital knowledge, and are able to customize the experience more and get a better, more customized website for themselves. And then there's something called Project Bento at the API level, which is us actually just grabbing the pipeline of all this great stuff that's coming in and plugging it into a very sophisticated website that the station may be building at the local model. So between the Cove video player, between iPad app and iPhone app, and between some things that we're doing at the website level to push other kinds of content, even text, there's a lot going on.
Perfect. Thanks, Shane.
Yeah.
So let's talk content. We'll start asking some questions here. So we're talking about hyperlocal, obviously, today. And Cliff and then maybe Angie, I'd love to hear from you guys what you think hyperlocal is. Like, what's the difference between some of the content that Shane talked about and then some of the content that you guys are doing at KCPT, what you think is hyperlocal? And we'll go Cliff and then Angie.
I think for us it's been really looking out the window into the community. What do people care about? What are they worried about? What do they want to have conversations about and find common vision, common language? And so for us, I think it's been a shift from content that we produced maybe one documentary every 5 years about some special thing to having people in the studio regularly and going out in the field and covering arts and culture, healthcare, education, nonprofits, tech and innovation on a regular, ongoing basis, trying to be much more agile and much more frequent with that content.
And so, Angie, same question, maybe if, from the producer's mindset. Is that like an extra 700 things that you're going to have to start doing in the future, or how does that work?
Yeah, a little bit. So if 5 years ago my job at KCBT was maybe focused on one documentary, and I might be spending an entire year researching that documentary, like many filmmakers, or if there's any of you in the room, that's, you know, you kind of got this pet project and you were really inspired by it. And the shift a little bit is that as a PBS station, our job isn't necessarily to be an independent thinking filmmaker, but to be a filmmaker who works at a PBS station that is serving the greater community that we're serving in whatever city that might be. In our case, it's Kansas City. So even though I might think that the greatest documentary would be something about, you know, women writers in America, Kansas City might be more interested in what's happening with the childhood obesity epidemic. And those are very different stories, but we are serving a community with stories that are important to our community. And I think that that's a little bit of the difference between what PBS stations need to do is let really reach out to a community that's serving us, that's paying for us, that's supporting us, and ask the question, what can we do to make this a better community? And then it doesn't stop at making that video. We can't just make the content. We really have to get down on the ground and make sure that content is used and that it's important and that it is serving. So if that might mean I might not just go out and research a project. Now I'm sitting on boards that have to deal with children's health. And I'm that person in the room that's looking around and saying, wow, you're a small little nonprofit over here that's going into schools all over the community, and your job is to try to, you know, help children. And then my job, hopefully, is to let other people know about it.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense.
If I could add one quick thing, yep. I'll give you an example of, I think, the power of it, and what we've started to see is instead of, you know, maybe doing something about old houses or, you know, which was fine, I mean, and all these other things that we've done over the years, is now we do things, and it might be about the sheriff's office being the biggest mental health provider in one of the counties there in the metro, and then they share that all over the country to all the other sheriff's offices talking about that policy. We had a mom the other day that emailed in. Her son had committed suicide at 12 years old. She watched our four-part series on suicide and all the different folks that were on that from the metro, Kansas City metro area, and she was just like, oh, my gosh, thank you for doing this, and our support group is watching this and sharing it, and so it makes you feel good. We feel like we're kind of onto the right thing, that it's actually serving folks every day, hopefully.
Yeah, that makes sense. And so Shane and Kevin, on that, how are you guys, I mean, and maybe even Kevin especially at that national level, like how do you know, like we talked about hyperlocal and they're adjusting to what the communities, but how at that national level, how does PBS know what people are interested in. I mean, is that listening online to people? Is that surveys? Like, how do you get a pulse for what content should be going on the air?
Well, there's basically kind of two different ways. And actually, before I answer that question, something came up. I was looking at the hashtags, and someone asked a really good question. How many people inside the room are not with public broadcasting? If you could just raise your hands, I'd be curious to get it. Okay, thank you. So back to the question. There's kind of two or three different ways that we look at it. One of them is just via social media. And every few months on the PBS Facebook page and a little bit less on Twitter, I'll post something saying, what do you like to see on the PBS Facebook page and what do you not like to see? And people will answer a lot, and they'll tell us. And then we hear from stations, too, and that's the main way that we hear, because there's a really strong station services group inside PBS Interactive, and I work with them a lot. And all of us working together, and actually someone from that group is in the room, Amy Baroque, and so we are constantly hearing from stations to say, we want to hear about this. This is coming up. This is kind of an issue that we really want to learn more about. And we'll try to cater the information that we send out via social media that way, too. And then also because we have social media monitoring services that send us information constantly, actually. So we can just see what people are talking about and respond that way and ask them in the moment, what do you want to see? What do you like? And we also hear when they're frustrated, too, and we can let stations know about that as well.
And Shane, I guess, especially at KLRU, does that type of listening on social channels, does that actually affect content? Like, have you guys ever said, wow, people just aren't digging this show and it might go away, or people absolutely love this and we need to keep it going or spin off something from that? Like, does that outside channel, you know, make it all the way inside?
Yeah, I think... You know, I think one of the misconceptions that I saw 6.5 years ago when I moved to Austin from New York and sort of started to get a feel for this business and start to work in public television, one of the perceptions I think on the part of the community was that we were, and maybe it's the perception of some people in this room right now, that we were this sort of really great, fantastic thing at the top of a hill that didn't listen to anybody and that didn't talk to anyone and didn't start conversations and have conversations with people. And we've worked really hard over the last number of years to change that. And that's been something that social media has been really helpful for us in being able to sort of have dialogue back and forth. Again, you know, as I said at the top, we're all independent, locally owned and operated nonprofit organizations. We care a lot about what people in our community think about the work that we're doing, and we try to listen to and solicit feedback on as many levels as we can so that we can sort of get an idea of what's happening. And that does affect where resources go, and that does affect the kind of projects that we're working on. You know, years ago, as Angie said, we would spend a year on a documentary. We're learning in this business, because it is an expensive business that we're in, we're learning to be faster, to be lighter, to be nimble, we're trying to put more local resources into what we're doing, but spread that across many more things so that we can have a larger impact on the community.
Yeah, you know, the thing that's interesting is that the PBS system, unlike maybe a Nat Geo or a History Channel who are presenting these types of incredible documentaries as well, certainly spend a lot of my time watching those networks as well. But the difference, I think, is that when we talk about hyperlocal, when the Downton Abbey series came out and everyone across the nation was in a buzz, like, wow, this is the, you know, really, this is powerful, and people were watching it, there was watch parties all over the place. Well, Kansas City just happens to have the National World War I monument. And so now we get to take this great national content and we can make it relevant in our community, specifically for our members and our viewers and the people there. So now, all of a sudden, we have like a series of speakers at the World War I Museum talking about World War I, we've got people excited about it locally, so we're not just affecting you sitting on your couch. All of a sudden, you sit on your couch and you're like, well, what else can I do with this show? Well, at a national level, maybe nobody's telling you what else you can do. We like to think that we can help people guide them through other opportunities and options, and that's definitely much different than just saying, we want you to sit at home and watch the show. We don't want you to sit at home and watch the show. We want you to sit at home, watch the show, and then take action. Go do something else. Get out, see a museum, support other local publications, other public institutions, yeah. and kind of get out and about. And that's part of what's driving the content we do now. So whether it's go to a museum or whether it's go join a, you know, go help out at the YMCA, I mean, it's that kind of different. You know, that's the content we're trying to push.
So tell me on that idea of that local content, are we going to see PBS stations transform so much in that, yeah, they'll still have these core anchor shows maybe that National produces and that you guys syndicate and pay for that content, but during the day or other parts of the day, are you going to take on the local ABC affiliate, CBS? Like, do you replace reporters? Do you go and poach people that are newscasters and that's what you're doing? Like, so explain that to me. And Cliff, I'll go with you and we'll just kind of go down here.
I think if you look at it, so I can't remember who explained this to me, but the idea of our business was much more about technology, and it's still about technology, but towers and transmitters way back, if you go back far enough, the 70s, 80s, et cetera, there were only a few channels and everything. Now it's much more about relationships, which is why we're trying to get better at social media and helping people have their public television moment. Here's this local content you might like. Here's this national content you might like. You're a big foodie. Here's our Check Please show. Let us help you explore our area, local and national. I think part of our mission is to be essential, and it's locally essential, and also having great national content from PBS and other folks producing it. But I think if we're going to be here in 5 years or 3 years or whatever, a lot of it's going to be how many producers do we have, how many reporters, how much local are we making? Because the way we can all get content anywhere, everywhere, you don't need anybody to sort of have an antenna up in town. Now there's the whole other cable rejector piece of that, but that's another for another time maybe. But I think it is our localness is probably what's going to help us survive, and the ability, as Angie said, the local national, and there's always a little tension there, PBS and stations, but working together to localize things, and with the push-pull Shane was talking about, mm-hmm. of all these different distribution platforms, I think we're starting to work together better and better. So that, to me, I could see a pretty healthy future if we do those things right.
Yeah. Angie?
Yeah. We're not going to replace the beat reporter. That's not the model that we're looking at. We definitely want to continue telling really important stories at a level that's maybe a little bit deeper. So if the reporter's going out, you know, 5 days a week and coming back with 10 stories, I'm going to go out 5 days a week, maybe seven, and hopefully come back with, you know, two really, really in-depth stories. And again, that hopefully those stories are not stories that anyone else is telling. I think really still at the heart of it, we want to be the place where we're telling stories that you're not going to hear other places. But the important thing is that, you know, we know that that's there's user-generated content, there's local content, there's national content, there's all this content out there. And I think what's really inspiring about what's happening at the national PBS level is that we're looking for a way to help people find a destination that helps them kind of break through some of that clutter. You want to go find content about national, you want to go find content that maybe is connected to local, hopefully that's at your PBS station's, you know, website.
Yeah. Shane, your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I sort of agree with that. I think one of the things that when I think about where we're heading and I think about television changing, and I mean, media is changing, newspapers are changing. I mean, I think one of the challenges for us is going to, in the next few years, be for us to think about, from a digital standpoint, not a television standpoint, but from a web standpoint, and where we're going with mobile and where we're going with web, is what is our role going to be in that? You know, it's an interesting mix that's happening right now. There are public radio stations all over the country that are actually hiring video producers right now, right? Because, you know, radio is one thing, but it's also about digital as well. And so they're telling stories through video. How are we going to tell stories on the web and through mobile? And when I think about where we're going from a television perspective, I do think about the local newspaper. I think where those things are headed and where they're going. and I wonder about where we're going to be. As a representative of KLRU, I have to say, you know, there's a really interesting difference between KCPT in Kansas City and between KLRU in Austin. KCPT is a station that is really focused on local, creating local content. We do some of that here at KLRU, but as most people in this room probably know, we also produce Austin City Limits. So we are a station that produces a piece of content that's on about 98% of public television stations across the country. So we make a show that's on every week in every city in America. And so I think when we think through where we're going from the station perspective, there are a couple of different variables that we're thinking through. And when we think about where we're going in the future, we're making a television show, but one of the great things that KLRU has done is this, in fact, last week we launched a new app, right? That is that, by the way, is going to be free during South by Southwest, so everybody should go and download a copy of it. It's called ACL Archive. And basically what we're doing is testing a new business model, right? This is an app where you can go and get some great content for free, but if you want to subscribe for $3 a month, you're going to get access to an unbelievable amount of content. And, you know, we're going to see where that goes and how that business model maybe changes what we do.
Okay, go ahead.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm from Hamburg in lovely Germany, so maybe I just want to confirm what you just said. I've been working there at a public broadcasting station, and as you know, public broadcasting is slightly differently organized in Germany.
Yes.
But what is happening there at the moment is that the stations that have covered regional areas, they are trying to go deeper and find some local, hyper-local markets there. And exactly as you said, what they are doing is they are supplying radio reporters with rucksacks or UMTS cards in it, and the small camcorders. So, because these radio reporters, their biggest asset was they were quick. They were quicker than television could have been before.
Right.
And so now this ability to be quick from radio comes together with the technology improvements, and so they have the ability to offer this hyperlocal.
We recently tested a new piece of equipment in our studios. KLRU hosts every month, hosts the Austin chapter of the Social Media Club organization. So Social Media Club meetings every month here in Austin happen at the KLRU studios. We stream those live, those meetings live, so that anybody anywhere can watch them. We recently tested a new piece of equipment, which is basically a backpack that can stream video to the web over 3G, 4G. It can take it to satellite. And when you get to that point, you've got a camera that is plugged into a backpack on your back that has a battery pack in the back of it, and it's sending that to satellite. You suddenly created a television station out of a single person. And that's pretty powerful.
Yeah. Kevin, so...
That's hyperlocal.
Yep.
Yeah, that's hyper. So, Kevin, you're sitting on this. So, there's 350 stations in the next 6 years. You know, they all magically change into these massive content production machines with local shows and, you know, doing a lot of their own hyperlocal type stuff. How does PBS fit in that? Do you just become a herder of cats? Do you still produce? Do you still push content down the line? Do you monitor and help them with that? Where do you guys fit into this rise of local content?
Well, luckily, we could say PBS doesn't produce now. So that would change. But from my perspective, I think what we would do and what we can do now because of social media is we can help local stations promote what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
We're doing that in a sense right now with our Facebook page, which any Facebook page that is a so-called brand page, you can geo-target the posts. Mm-hmm. So you can go in and target, we can say, and we're doing this right now, we've been doing it for a couple of years, we can actually say, okay, people, attention Denver, There is an event going on with Rocky Mountain PBS, and you should know about this. So we've been doing this for, as I said, for a couple of years with about 100 different stations. So we now, for the first time ever, PBS has an opportunity to take this national kind of venue and completely parse it down to local level so that we're, you know, promoting what stations are doing and also finding out what people are saying, because if only people in Denver can see this post that's going on the PBS Facebook page, only people in Denver can see it. So they're reacting to it. They're saying things about if there's an initiative that Rocky Mountain PBS is covering about local bike trails, for instance. People there are having a dialogue on the PBS Facebook page, but people who work for that station can also see it and can come back to us and say, how can we be doing that more?
Yeah.
We're looking to, into doing that kind of thing also with Twitter and Pinterest and other kinds of – how can we take PBS's scale and put it down to a local level?
All right. So what's your Pinterest strategy? Let's hear it. That's like the buzzword of South by Southwest. That and hipsters. Hipsters pinning things.
Bring in the lawyers.
Bring in the lawyers. All right. You heard it here. Tweet that out, guys. So let me ask, Cliff, when you and I talked about this, you used the word content strand. And I've heard you say that a lot and a lot of the stuff that you guys are talking about internally and even externally. So explain that idea of what a content strand is.
Yeah, for us, I think the first year that I was at our station, my first year there, we just went out and talked to the community and tried to find out, you know, what did they care about the most, what were they worried about the most, and through some trial and error, some focus groups and panels and bringing people in, just trying to pick, we started with about 9 or 10 different things. We were probably a little too open to adding them, but I think it was good in a way, and so it was arts and culture, healthcare, education, nonprofits, and doing those stories. Now, what we've evolved to now is really looking at a community agenda, and we're trying to boil down to about 5 areas where we're going to plant a flag and say, these are 5 areas that we're going to cover forever and ever, and, you know, sort of until further notice, which has been really helpful to us for foundations and individuals and partners in the community to say, you're working on education or you're working on healthcare, and those are obviously very wide open areas. But they just know we're on the team. Yeah. We want to be constructive. We want to make Kansas City a better place. And in those areas, we're going to do that. And so I think that's been a big change for us, is being seen, even on the funding side, being seen as a partner change agent, not as you're a charity that I need to get out of my office. Can I write a check and will you leave? So I think, I mean, we've seen that. We had a donor when I first got to the station. They gave us $5,000 to be on one of our adjacent to one of our national shows. They just gave us $50,000 to help cover local issues. So yeah. I have to make sure we make payroll. So that's also a good thing when they start to see you that way. And it does raise, and we may want to talk about this, it raised the issue of you can't let people, they can restrict their funding to a constant content strand, but they can't restrict it and say, you have to make this story or you have to interview this person. They can't do that or we blow it up.
Yeah. So we, go ahead.
Cliff, tell everybody what the name of the show is that you use these strands.
The Local Show. So it's really clever, but it's kind of straightforward.
You've been through a huge list of a panel that decides to come up with the name.
But it's worked, and again, cynically from a funding perspective, and that is one of the things we have that I think we are lucky in. While we are challenged, and I think we're all nervous about where will we be in 5 years, I remind ourselves, our team, we've got all these assets. We have a big stage, we've got a truck, we've got small cameras, we've got talented producers. We know how to fundraise. We've got a lot of issues in our community that we need to deal with and talk about. And we have multiple funding remedies. We have the ability to go to foundations and individuals and corporations. And people care about these things. And they're worried that people don't know enough about what's going on in the arts in Kansas City. And so we are, while we're not going to address sort of all the market failures going on in print journalism and other things, we can, at least with these various remedies, which I think the newspapers wish they could say, oh, I'll just go to a foundation and have them write me a check, right? So that's a great remedy for us, but it is always cobbling that together and trying to be very careful about not letting people lead you down a path to say, oh, so if our producers don't want to cover it anyway, then we don't cover it. We don't do it. So we sort of let them help us figure out what to cover in the community, and then we go raise the money for that.
Yeah. And so you brought it up, and I'm by no means a public broadcasting system wonk or expert at it. But I am a bit of a wonk around nonprofits, and we talk about how you guys fundraise in the book, The Future of Nonprofits, that I did. And so I'd love to hear from, you know, a couple of you is, so looking at this, looking at how you guys are changing, what is the value when I go out and I do the pledge drive, right? And I give to you guys, or I'm a foundation and I give you money, because you're not saving animals in local community, right? You're not a hospital. You're not helping kids at the shelter. So why would I give to public television? Like, what is that intrinsic need for you guys to exist as a nonprofit?
We're not maybe saving the animals. We might not be actually saving lives of the kids. But I think that what we hope we're doing is, from a content producer, is that we are telling, we're putting a spotlight on those stories that make sure that everybody knows about it. There's a lot of stories being told out there, no doubt, and they're all worthy, most of them. Most of them are worthy. But when we can say, as a local public television station, that we're going to tell the story about needs that are in the community, not just the story about, you know, the woman down the street who has 500 cats. That's a story we're going to see on our nightly news, and it's going to be sensational, and someone's going to think that's sad. We're going to tell the story about, you know, the man who's opened up a nonprofit and he has 50 dogs he takes around to schools to help kids who've been bullied. And that's the story we're going to tell. And it's a little bit about animals, and it's a little about the love of the animals, and those are the types of things that we hope people want to support us for, that we're making sure that you know about these really amazing opportunities in your community. And then maybe you want to go and be one of the people who volunteers with that organization. Mm-hmm. We don't just raise ourselves up. We want to raise up the community with us. And hopefully that's the types of things we want to be fundraising against, why you should support us, because those are the stories we're telling.
Yeah, Shane.
Well, and I would look at education for a second. So can I get a show of hands in this room? How many people, when you were a kid, at some point in your childhood, watched or learned from a show that was on public television? Yeah, it's huge. I happen to be the exact age of Sesame Street, right? And so I was there in the very early days, and a lot of, look, we talked at the beginning of this about your PBS moment. My PBS moment was, I grew up on a farm in the middle of southeast Iowa with not very many neighbors around me. And I learned about what a city was from public television, from watching Sesame Street. I learned about what that people came in different colors, and they had different, you know, hairstyles, and they dressed differently, and so many things that I learned when I was a kid. Learned what a symphony was, learned what a ballet was, right? They didn't have those things where I grew up, and that's that educational element, I think, is really, really super important. And I think when you take a look at what we're doing with apps right now at PBS, it's pretty incredible. We've got new studies and statistics that show kids spending as little as 2 weeks with one of our learning apps significantly raises their reading scores and their reading ability. That's pretty incredible stuff. And that's us moving beyond television and looking at new ways of reaching out and helping people through education. And I think it's important to point out really quickly, as we talk about how we produce stuff, right? Kevin mentioned a few moments ago that PBS isn't producing anything. The way this model works, right? KLRU, when you tune in to PBS wherever you are, you see Austin City Limits on television. That show is being produced and paid for by KLRU and given to PBS in order to distribute it to all of the stations, right? So every piece of content that you see, right, you watched Mr. Rogers, Gary over here watched Mr. Rogers when he was a kid, right? That program was produced by the local PBS station in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. But it was distributed through PBS so that every station in the country could air it. So all of the even national shows that you're watching are locally produced. They may just be produced with a focus that's meant to reach out to everyone.
Actually, there's if I could pop in, there's a couple comments about how the people in the audience would like us to talk a little bit more about content. So to that end, if you want to, if there's a question you want to ask about that.
Yeah, so good point. So on that, you know, we talked about content strands. We talked about you guys aren't replacing the local beat reporter who's covering the hoarding situation, you know, in your city. And
sorry, we just had that story.
No, it's cat, so. that's definitely something that people cover. So talk to me, and we talked a little bit about how the audience decides what that content is, and then how you guys respond. And we even discussed that switch, but how do you manage that? So tell me, and maybe Cliff, you start this, is how will you actually dedicate staff to get new content? You know, will you have the switch to have a news editor assigning topics, and you'll have a morning meeting for 20 minutes, you're going to go out and cover this, Angie had a great idea, she's halfway through a story, because you're switching into, at that point, a news organization, and not a TV station, and not maybe that traditional nonprofit model. I mean, there's not a lot of nonprofits that are news stations, right? I mean, there's definitely some big ones, but how do you balance that when it comes to content?
Yeah, I think in terms of the tactics for that, for our station, we've done a couple of field trips around to other stations, and one of, I think, the most impressive was KPBS in San Diego, and a lot of people here are probably familiar with that. For us, it was it's a very aspirational thing to look at what they've done. They're basically saying, we're going to save local journalism. I think they're the highest-rated public radio station there. There's other examples of that kind of thing, but they have, I guess, 40 producers that are cross-trained to write for their web, to do radio production and television production. And so they're very good at sort of cross-pollinating all of that. If they have a morning session with a group of folks on the radio, they grab one of those experts and interview them to be on their nightly newscast that night, some kind of interview. So, and they look at basically our distribution platforms as the shipping department. And so they're just making content. And so Shane talked about that earlier. Yeah, I think there is going to be a breakdown of those kind of things. I think the challenge inside the station for us from a practical standpoint is trying to get our producers in to work together to say, how do we evolve our shop so that we don't do it the way we've always done it, get smaller cameras, get faster, as this gentleman's point back here, be more agile and quicker about it, still want it to be good and balance the good quality content versus the fact that we need to be more frequent and in people's lives more. I think the community content manager piece, which you know a lot about that, is that's another part for us with social media, is keeping people's attention in between Angie's every 5 week Imagine KC special about how do you make Kansas City more vibrant, connected, and green. Well, what we want to do is now talk to people about that subject matter every couple of days, not just every 5 weeks, which is part of our evolution too.
Yeah, I was really interesting when you were talking about how the radio, how they're, you know, we're taking things out and they're doing their video cameras and they're basically becoming video producers. And it certainly is a very big shift for a producer who has been used to having a lot of time to really craft a story and spend the time in an edit suite to craft that story. And it's a balance between still wanting to provide that PBS quality story, because we don't want to give that up. I mean, that's what we're known for. We want to continue to provide that really, you trust us. We don't want to lose your trust by being too fast. We also know we have to move quickly. And that means that if I'm telling a story that I want to spend some more time on, I want to spend a full week really getting to the bottom of a story, making it look beautiful, making you want to watch it. But it means that every day I'm also leaking a little bit of that story out to you. So I'm leaking my own story. You know, I'm telling you little bits about it. I'm telling you things that I saw. I'm taking a picture of the woman that I interviewed.
Sneaking
some of that stuff in there. But it doesn't mean I have to give up the story. But I'm telling you a lot more, and hopefully you're really engaged throughout the process. And if you're following the story, you get to see that you get a reward at the end. You know, you saw little bits. And then the big reward is that final 6 or 7 minute piece that airs. And it's different. I mean, and we're switching the way that we worked. I mean, as a television producer, I had this great gig, right? I got to take out really nice cameras and videographers. I had an editor, sound guy, and that was awesome. I mean, God, who wouldn't love that? Here, go shoot that. Well, now I gotta shoot it, now I gotta write it, and I gotta edit it. But there's also something really amazing about the creative process and the way your mind just kind of thinks like, oh, wow, now I can kind of, I see you know, I hear different things, I see different things, and it is a, it's a it's a shift certainly, yeah. But it's one that we all knew was going to come eventually, and so now I'm having to write differently. I'm going to write for the web. It's different than writing for video. It's different from writing from radio. They yeah. all, you know, you hear the radio. They say, Cliff Keel said. I don't have to do that in TV. I just put a little graphic up. It's little different nuances that are definitely changing. But yeah. it's exciting to be a part of that change, too.
So, Kevin, and on the content note, you have PBS, which is a large national nonprofit and a well-known brand in its own right. And so why aren't you guys taking that and producing content? Like, why wouldn't there be you guys covering these big scope projects that maybe local stations are not able to cover because of the size or the investigative reporting or whatever it might be?
I think it's because we're legally prohibited from doing it. That's probably the main reason. So yeah, it's because it's in the charter for the broadcasting service that PBS itself can't produce. So, and that's something, going back to what Shane was saying, it's something that's kind of interesting. when I meet people for the first time, they'll you know, say I work at PBS, they'll automatically assume PBS is a network, and we're not. We're a membership organization like AARP or, you know, other membership organizations you're part of, but the local stations are our members. So that's why we're listening to them and what they're saying, and also their own members too, what they're saying, because we want to make sure our members are happy and that they're kind of doing well, because when they do well, we do better as well. And actually, a question came up, a really good question came up with the hashtag that I want to throw back to you guys, is how will local viewers and donors, back to what you were saying, how will local viewers and donors be able to support the hyper-local model based on what you all have been talking about?
How will they support it?
Yeah. How will local viewers and donors be able to support this hyper-local business model?
Well, hopefully because it's a little more efficient, and we're not... I mean, our station was cut in half, you know, 5 years ago. We had probably twice as many knees and twice as many, and, you know, we had a slew of all those people I was mentioning before. And I think the one thing that, you know, PBS stands for and we believe in is that we're trusted, that you should trust what we're doing. We're doing it for the right reasons, right. And the content we're providing you is as honest as we know, as I personally know. I'll just talk on my own behalf. And that the support we hope you're giving your stations, and that we hope that, you know, other philanthropers will give, is that they believe in that content and they trust it. And in a world where there's not a lot of places to trust, I mean, it's easy for me to stand here on my bully pulpit and say that. I mean, I work for the place, but yeah. I do believe that. I mean, I think that's why we want, that why you should want to support locally, and that it's when you're seeing newspapers fold and you're seeing the opportunities for local content to be produced. I mean, we're hopeful that we're going to stand up and in 10 years still be here to tell those stories,
yeah.
But only if we're supported.
And I also, just on a fundraising note, I think I would say a couple of things. There's a part of fundraising in the future that we don't know, right? There are new ways for us to think about how we do that. Having an app on the App Store and having a subscription on the App Store, mm-hmm. I think about this for a second. If I told you that Austin City Limits costs $10 million a year to make an entire season, you would probably think that show costing $10 million is pretty cheap. That's pretty cost effective that we're making a season of that program that's been on for 38 years for $10 million. I mean, that's probably John Stewart's salary a year, $10 million. I think Brian Williams probably makes a lot more money than that a year. But actually, the entire budget of KLRU, everything that we do, all of the shows that we produce locally, all of the events that we do, all of the content that we provide through Austin City Limits, and everything else that happens at our station over the course of an entire year costs $10 million. So again, if we go back and we think about a million people paying, let's say, $20 a year to be a part of a subscription for Austin City Limits content, okay, that could be potentially $20 million a year, all right? So I could, if we think about a future way of funding, if that were to work out, I could make twice as many Austin City Limits episodes and give my entire community a PBS station for free. So there are some interesting funding models that we're going to think through as we go along. You know, I just think I think there's a lot to be thought about in that area.
So, guys, we are going to open up for Q&A. We have about 10 minutes left. Of course, more questions. Everyone here is on Twitter and is good at it and actually responds and engages with the audience, which is amazing. So you have all their Twitter handles up there if you don't get to ask a question. And, of course, we'll go back in after this and feverishly answer questions on the hashtag and things like that too. But old-fashioned, come on, stand on up and walk to that microphone so everybody can hear you, because I know they're recording us. So and ask questions, guys. Go ahead and go to the microphone, sir. Oh, he beat you to it.
So I'm running a small public TV station. I can't afford PBS. Uh-huh. Where's my content going to come from? Can I get Austin City Limits?
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting question. Under the current model that we operate on, the answer to that particular question is no, you can't. There are a lot of ways. Well, I should let the producer talk about where the content's going to come from, but
yeah, well, there are certainly. I mean, if you're running a PBS station, or you're running an independent station, probably more likely, mm-hmm. then there are lots of, I mean, probably in this room, there might be an independent filmmaker who would love to, you know, have a place to run their film. And you just have a harder job ahead of you. You know, the beauty of being a member station is that we have access to this incredible, you know, documentaries and, you know, antiques roadshows and Novas and stuff. So we don't have to think about, you know, 90% of the content that we're distributing, and we know, and again, we get to trust it. And then, but then there's that other 10% that's coming from folks like me and my colleagues in Kansas City. You know, we, KCPT, looks for other great filmmakers in Kansas City and what kinds of stories they're telling. And if it's a story that we would tell and it's told like we would tell it, then we'll air it. If it's not the type of story we'd be trusted to tell, we wouldn't
narrow. But in answering that question, we also sound exactly like an organization that's ripe to be disrupted. And that's another thing that we need that we should bring up and mention. Yes?
Yeah, go ahead.
So one of the things that we're going to have to do in thinking through new models is we're going to have to think about how we recruit new talent, how we find new users, and how we work out new business models for ourselves. And then I think that's an important part of our future.
Yeah, and I would just add before Cliff chimes in, as somebody who is a part of a nonprofit here in Austin called Lights, Camera, Help, it's a film festival, and so we're constantly looking to get great films and show them, but then what do we do with that content? Right? Would we have a public television station to show some of that content, to share it? Would we pitch KLRU on having a local show? Would we have a film festival in conjunction with KCPT of the best films that we get from the state of Kansas? Like, who knows what that looks like? So I love Angie's earlier point as a nonprofiteer on the panel of saying, you guys are a nonprofit, you're highlighting other nonprofits, we're highlighting you guys back, and so there's a great opportunity there for content sharing between these nonprofit organizations. Next question, going up.
Yeah, hi, my name is Tarek. I'm from Cairo, Egypt. I've been very active with Ongoing Revolution. I wouldn't be able to tell much about local TV in the U.S., but I can tell you about Egypt, which is a completely different dynamic, obviously, but I'd like to know what you guys have to say about this. In Egypt, only a quarter of the population are on the web. I'm very active on Twitter, on Facebook, on social networks, whatever. I work in that business, and all the activists are, but at the end of the day, the huge majority of the population can't hear me and don't have no idea what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And so a lot of people depend on TV, and during Mubarak's regime and during the dictatorship over their many years, public TV was one of the strongest tools they had to indoctrinate people, to brainwash them, what have you. And until now, we have a bigger problem now, and I'd like to know what you guys think about that, is that we have public TV and public radio, which are completely anti-revolutionary, completely against all the revolutionary movement. And then we also have private satellite channels, which are available across the entire Arab world on the satellite called Nilesat. I'm not sure if you've heard of it. it's got hundreds of channels, they're all owned by rich businessmen who are against the revolution. And therefore, the voice of the revolution is completely shattered when it comes to TV and radio. So what I want to say is two little things. First is, how could we have information being broadcasted without the person giving the money, the funding, controlling it? Because maybe in the U.S. you're talking about something local topics and nobody has anything against it, but at a time of a revolution, these things are, it becomes immense, it becomes very intensive, and you see that you're either for the revolution or against it, and the majority of people are against it. And then the second thing is, it's the idea of trying to get everyone to go online and to use YouTube and to use Twitter and to use whatever tools they have and to have their cell phones and have a camera on their cell phone and be able to send the information out themselves independently and therefore not need any funding and therefore share their ideology without having to report to anyone.
Right. The quick answer to that is that if a public television station specifically, the people that give us money cannot dictate the content. They can't tell me how to write that story. And really what we would hope that, in the case for you, if this were to be, I mean, can't imagine that this would work, but that someone just wants the content told. And those are the people that we're after. Those are the people that are funding us. They don't want to tell us how to do it. They don't want to tell us how to tell the story, but they know it's important that it be told. And those are the types of funders that we're looking for. And we don't go after funders that don't have that kind of vision. Yeah. That it might not be a good story. You know, we have corporations in Kansas City that give us money. Guess what? We tell about the bad stuff they do too. We don't just tell about their pet projects. We tell about how they got a tax break for their land that wasn't good. Or we doesn't matter if they're donors. That's not what they gave us money for. Not to even so.
And I would just chime in really quickly. I think my PBS moment to this point is that I love PBS because it's fiercely independent. And I think of those two words, fiercely independent, that they're good and they're bad. And yeah, you know, Lexus might have brought to you this segment and, you know, as a corporate donor, but if they're polluting or that car dealership just laid off so many people or they did something wrong, then I will still see a week later a report on that about Lexus or whoever it might be, whatever the brand is. So I know that fiercely independent is what makes me in love with PBS for you guys doing that.
Yeah, that those two words are perfect. And that it's unfortunate. That's why the web, what you want to have, I think a local PBS station has such an important role to play in the web. Because as long as you trust us, as long as you believe that we are fiercely independent and we are telling the story the way it should be told, you're going to trust what you see on the web from us too. And you can't trust everything you see on the web, but we hope that you would trust this. So. And that's both local and national. Let's put on both, on all levels.
Yeah, and welcome to Austin.
Yeah, totally. Yeah,
that's absolutely.
Really interesting. Good question.
I mean, it is the locally owned and operated part, too. I think that's important in our stations. I mean, many of the media enterprises in our communities are not locally owned and operated. I think your question brings also the point where our big stage that we have in our community, even though we don't have massive numbers, will have anything we do around these nonprofits or local business, whatever's going on. You know, a couple hundred thousand people will now know about that entity or organization or story, and people can't stop them from knowing about it. I mean, to your point with the web, if people don't have access to it, you know, not everybody does. I think we just assume that everybody in America has high-speed internet, and they don't. So, I mean, that big stage still has a role, I think, to some extent.
Let's get another question. We have time for one more. In the back. Good. All right. Well, go ahead.
Hey, my name is Nathan Toby. I'm at Frontline now. But I used to work at WPSU in Pennsylvania for a long time. Oh, not that long, a couple of years. Something I was working on and really passionate about there was exactly what you guys were talking about, building hyperlocal models for content. And I think there is definitely, I mean, on the content side, it makes so much sense. The challenge, you know, from what I was working on was really, how do you make the business work? How do you turn hyperlocal into something that is self, not only pays for itself, but actually pays for other things to do? And I just was curious, could you guys say any experiences you've had, challenges, or things that have worked in terms of, you know, making hyperlocal a funding and business model?
Let me start and then go to you. So I think the by way of introduction, I don't know if we have any content creators in this room, but it seems like the hardest thing in the world is to get somebody to pay us to make content. It is so difficult to fund. And I'm looking at a producer right now who struggles every day to fund his terrific television show that lots and lots of people love. But it's still difficult to fund. I think KCPT is one of the few operations in the country that actually has their production department fully funded. Cliff?
We do. We raise about $1 million a year for local content production, and it's been this model of going out for what people care about, they're worried about, et cetera, balancing this challenge. I think the next phase for us, and we've talked to a lot of these different folks about it, is how do we do a better job, and Detroit Public Television is doing this, connecting content that people care about with a database of audience to say, not our members, but you love food or you're worried about the environment, et cetera. How do we show you that piece of content in email or text or whatever to get it to you? Because I think it's one of our biggest problems right now. People just, there's so much clutter. They don't know the good piece of work we did. I think if they do, we'll end up with more individual donors because they'll say, oh, I like Downton Abbey. And then, oh, by the way, I saw those really cool pieces you did on the nonprofits I care about. That's kind of our next step, is how do I give you that moment several times a year?
So, guys, before we give them a round of applause, we didn't get to talk about this, but I wrote a book about a lot of this stuff in public media called The Future of Nonprofits, and I'm doing a book signing today if you guys want to come by and say hi. It's at 5:30 in Ballroom G, so come by, say hi, so I'm not just checking my iPhone and pretending that people are tweeting me. Come by, ask questions, and say hello. Noah, back at the convention center, Ballroom G.
It's
so come by, and
book.
Let's give them a round
really
of applause,
book.
Guys. Great panel. And feel free to come up to the front, ask questions, get busy.